So George, I'm so happy we're back and it is springtime, everyone. And March was a little iffy. We had a few teaser days, as we like to call them, because we had some beautiful weather and then still weather with like in the 30s.
Yeah.
But here in April and
yeah, I definitely appreciate having, you know, that day the other week where it was like, yes, spring is here. But then with it being New England, you can't get too used to it because there's 3 to 4 snowstorms that we have to mix in between there.
Yeah, reality check.
A hurricane, and then we'll get a little bit of the warm weather. So hopefully once we get to kind of mid-April into May, we'll finally start having some consistent warm weather.
Yes. Yep. We're looking forward to it here in my household to be outside. And I'm definitely a happier person when the sun's out.
Yeah. I agree with you on that one. So,
yeah. But I'm excited about our episode today.
Awesome. Thanks, Tisha. So today I'd like to welcome our guest, Shannon Taber, who is the Director of Inclusion and Accessibility at United Cerebral Palsy of Eastern Connecticut. So Shannon, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Awesome. So let's kick this off. We'll jump right in, Shannon. So your title, Director of Inclusion and Accessibility, sounds like a lot of things going on there. So can you tell us a little bit about your role at UCP and kind of what that means?
Absolutely. So when I started at UCP, I was in the residential program back in 2012. And when there was an opening for the Disability Support Program, which is the unfunded sort of program at UCP, for people with physical disabilities, I moved out of residential and into the Disability Support Program. When the Disability Support Program was reevaluated for its effectiveness, we kind of determined that disability support didn't encompass everything we did in that program. So we changed the name to the Inclusion and Advocacy Program.
Okay.
We then added technology to my job, which then became an accessibility program. So inclusion and accessibility, I cover both programs. The program itself is for all ages and all stages, all disabilities. We work with kiddos, you know, a year and a half up to adults at 93 years old. Mm-hmm. We don't limit ourselves to any disability. We do require individuals to have a physical disability. Obviously, the accessibility piece of my job is removing barriers to independence and workplace and education. So the two jobs themselves are for inclusion, mm-hmm. is helping people access those resources in our community and the services that are available to help people who are sort of falling through the cracks.
Yeah. So it certainly sounds like, you know, it's one of those things where you're assisting everyone kind of based on their needs and you don't have any particular age range, which is something that I think, you know, most providers say, hey, we focus on this group or we focus on this group. But it sounds like your role really allows you kind of greater access to everyone within the community.
It does. It does.
Nice. So one of the things that you mentioned in there was some of the technology piece. When you say technology, what do you mean by that?
Sure. So assistive technology, mm-hmm. which it does not just encompass technology. So that's always a fun thing to explain. So assistive technology would be any type of equipment, whether it's modified or bought straight off of a shelf, that helps a person overcome something that they're struggling to do, whether that's mobility, you know, wheelchairs, walkers, canes. That's assistive technology. Whether it's a device that reads a screen to you, screen readers, that's assistive technology. It's everything from utensils to walkers. It's across the board. And sometimes it's not even technology. We have rulers for kiddos with learning disabilities to help them read. That's all technology.
The thing that you talked about of the technology piece and it not being just, you know, how are you accessing what we might consider technology? How did that, you know, that need come about? Or how did you guys discover there was a need for that within the community?
Right. So there's always been a need. And technology has been around since forever. Early 1900s is the first time that it was documented. Oh. And it was added into policy. And schools have always acknowledged that kids with technology do better in a classroom. So the need came around. Again, it's always been evident, but it was finally recognized that we can do something about it within the nonprofits and within DDS and all of that. Within our community, we figured it out that by accessing Connecticut Tech Act, by accessing grants and other financial opportunities, raising funds to help people in our community, we found out that we can help people with disabilities get access to the technology. Technology gets better and better, as you know. Every time a new iPhone comes out and we have to go and get it, every time they update the smartwatch, you know, the Apple Watch, we have to go and get it. That technology is not just great for the typical person, it's great for the neurotypical or the person with differences, you know, in speech and vision and hearing. All of those pieces that we use have accessibility features that work for people with disabilities.
Now you mentioned kind of the something called the CT Tech Act. What is that, and what does that allow, you know, a provider such as yourself to do?
So the CT Tech Act, every state has a Tech Act project. It's a federal program, and the project's main goal is to put technology in the hands of people with disabilities. Within Connecticut, there are, I think, 8 partner agencies, and they're within the different regions. And the partner agencies receive funding from the Tech Act to offer services. Those services are demonstrations and loans of technology to people with disabilities. They are trainings and assessments and evaluations and different opportunities for us to create awareness within the community of technology that's available. So the Tech Act project, it pays the partner agencies to go out and do the work, basically. So we became a Tech Act partner in 2017, which allowed us to open up our first technology center, which is in Quaker Hill.
Okay.
That's the Atlas Center. And then last year in 2021, we opened up our second assistive technology center, which is in Fairfield County. That one doesn't have a great name. Sorry.
You know, you talked about, you know, there's, you know, federal dollars to get this. And I assume there's, you know, a collaboration with the state to make sure this happens. But if, let's say I'm someone in the community and I'm supporting someone, whether I'm with a provider or with a family member, how do I access these services? Like, how do I find you and your agency?
It's a really great question. So the Tech Act project has obviously a website that links anybody going to that website. It offers links to all of the partner agencies. That's a big one. But if you were to just go on the website and look up assistive technology in my area, I can honestly tell you that some of the local agencies, not just UCP, but some of the local agencies are going to pop up first, because there's such a push right now, not just in Connecticut, but across the country, to get technology out there, to make it affordable. And when it's not affordable, to make it accessible. There's in Connecticut alone, I'm certain that other states have it, but in Connecticut, there's a loan program, and I believe it's still Berkshire Bank.
Okay.
But that loan program offers incredibly low interest to people within Connecticut to purchase technology, whether that's wheelchair vans, stair lifts, wheelchair ramps, right? Those big tickets, you can go to the Tech Act Project website, and you can fill in an application for the loan, and they'll contact you and they'll help you through the entire application. And then they help you through accessing, you know, the funding. And if you're not qualified for the funding, they're happy to reach out to different grant programs. UCP is one of them, to get more access to funding so that we can bring the cost down and then hopefully get you approved.
Yeah, so it sounds like there's certainly kind of a partnership within that community of, you know what, here's the resource, but if you, you know, aren't quite meeting the needs, let's pull together other resources to really make sure you can get what you need. So a real push to make sure people are able to access that within their community.
Right. And I will tell you that UCP writes grants all year long for funding opportunities that we can then pass on to our consumers. So somebody who maybe doesn't need a $50,000 wheelchair van, but needs a $800 communication device, they will refer them back to us, as opposed to putting that on the consumer. They'll reach back out to us and say, hey, I have somebody in your area that needs some financial assistance. Can you help? Again, we write grants all year long, And typically we say, absolutely, send them to us. As I mentioned earlier, we did the United Way site visit last week, and we did a financial poll where we looked at all the data from the last 3 years. And since fiscal year 18, we have provided $126,000 worth of financial assistance to our community for technology, housing modifications. So
yeah, that's a pretty significant, you know, amount of money. And for people who aren't familiar kind of where your, you know, your main office is located. So you're based out of Eastern Connecticut. So Quaker Hill, Waterford, for those who aren't familiar with the area. Now, when you're talking about kind of accessing your community, are you talking about just within kind of the eastern part of Connecticut, or is this kind of statewide that you've been able to reach?
So I'm now pretty much statewide. I'm not limited to Eastern Connecticut anymore. Some funding that we have is primarily Eastern Connecticut, depending on what grant we're accessing, sure, what funding opportunity. I will tell you that we do have fundraising dollars that are not always limited to Eastern Connecticut, and we can access those and use those when it's, you know, an appropriate need. So we're not limited. We try to write grants statewide so that there's funding for different communities and different regions.
Yeah.
We do have some funding opportunities right now that we've gotten for our new area, Fairfield County. So things like that.
Okay. Yeah. Now, and this is kind of a little bit of back information, because you and I had a conversation offline about technology. And again, I think, you know, the common terminology with technology is we're thinking this is something super high tech, and it's going to be, you know, a machine that's talking to you or a robot of some sort. But, you know, when we were discussing before, you said there are three different levels of technology. So can you talk about that a little bit?
Absolutely. So obviously, no tech, low tech is a great starting area. You know, a younger consumer might not be ready for high tech. No tech, low tech is something that you might see a beginner using.
Okay.
And that, again, is that anything without a lot of circuitry, it's the least expensive of the products. And it's typically requires minimal to no training. Again, think of that ruler, or think of glasses. It really could be like pen and paper, because if you think about it, having trouble communicating, you give somebody pen and paper, that's assistive technology.
Yeah.
So again, that no tech, low tech is that first level. Then you move up to a mid tech.
Okay.
Mid tech is a little bit more expensive, has some, you know, components, or requires maybe batteries or electricity. And it does require a little bit more training. Calculators.
Okay.
You know, you don't just take a calculator and know right away how to use it. You have to play with it a little bit. From mid tech, you're going to move up to high tech. That's your computers. That's your dedicated speech devices. Those require training.
Okay.
They require effort. They require funding. And that's usually somebody who has worked their way up.
Okay.
That's not to say somebody can't jump in the deep end and have high tech to start.
Sure.
We do see that. But typically we try to work our way up.
Yeah. So, you know, you've been doing kind of the, you know, the assistive tech for a while now. Are there common themes that you see when you're working with individuals, or is there kind of a, this is what we're helping people in, but this is the kind of request we get all the time? You know, what are the people, you know, within the community really looking for?
So since COVID started, thank you, COVID, we have had a very strong theme of social isolation, increasing inclusion, and reducing sort of that social, I guess, the depression that we're seeing.
Okay.
So what can we do to help people who are still staying home, or who are maybe not able safely to go in the community? So that's been a huge theme for 2 years strong now. And it's been a huge funding theme. You know, we had the CARES Act, and we had a lot of Department of Public Health opportunities for us to go into communities where people were not able to access technology because they don't go into a day program, or they don't go to the library, they're not going to the senior center. Those are a couple of opportunities that we've had. This social isolation is a big one.
Okay.
We have connected recently with the Affordable Connectivity Program, and done, I think we've done 3 free tablet giveaways now, where we go in and we invite as many people in the community, and we safely give them a place to come in and access the program. And basically we're hosting this, but after they get their free tablet, we're making sure that we say there are accessibility features, there are modifications that we can help you make to your tablet so that you can use it, you know, easily.
Okay.
So social isolation is the biggest one. Smart home technology has been a very close second.
Smart
home technology has really taken off in this last couple of years. We've seen a lot of DDS case managers and a lot of DDS consumers wanting to utilize smart home technology as a way to live independently, reducing maybe the need for staffing as the staffing shortage is.
Sure. And that makes sense.
It does. And so there's smart home technology that really can increase safety and independence. So that's been another theme.
Okay. Now, you know, I think one of the things when it comes to, you know, assistive tech, it's a relatively newer term within the state. And so, you know, if I'm a family or I'm a provider and I'm saying, you know what, I know that I have an individual who could use some assistive tech and I don't know anything about that. Are there certain qualifications that come along with someone who does assistive tech, or is it that, hey, we have some things here, we have iPads, and now we're assistive tech? Like, how do you really determine, is the person that you're reaching out to qualified to do this? Or, you know, what should we be looking for?
It kind of goes back to that Tech Act project, that website which shows you the partner agencies. I will tell you that the partner agencies all have to maintain the same best practices and standards of care. We all have to answer the same requirements. The assistive technology specialist is sort of the basic level that you would want to go to. If someone has an assistive technology specialist, that means they've gone through the class and they've gotten a certification. So that means they have done all of the training involved for all of the categories in assistive technology, because you can be really skilled at working with iPads, but that's only one aspect of this job. You could be really skilled at looking at an educational plan and say, I can help a student, you know, learn easier or read or, you know, communicate. But that's, again, only one category.
Right.
So with an assistive technology specialist, you've got someone who's gone through a class and done all 10 categories.
Oh, wow.
That doesn't mean that I'm an expert in any one category. And I think that's important. Now, if you've got someone who's a speech and language pathologist with an ATS background, an assistive technology specialty background, they're going to be experts and phenomenal in the field of speech and communication devices.
Yeah.
I'm not sure I would go to them for a wheelchair ramp.
Right.
Not to say that you couldn't, but where you've got someone with an ATS, I don't have a specialty. I dabble in all of it, and I have to keep up my standards of care in all of it.
Okay.
So just, I don't know if that helps.
Yeah, no, that definitely makes sense to me. So.
I want to circle back to the cost, because I know that comes up a lot. Does insurance, private or Husky, does insurance cover any of the cost of assistive technology?
So that has been a fight for a while.
Surprise.
I know. Unbelievably, the Connecticut Tech Act, so in the state of Connecticut, we have an advisory council, and the council is made up of equal parts providers and individuals with disabilities who utilize assistive technology. And so every time we meet, we kind of talk about ways that people have gotten technology paid for. And it is a struggle to get that funded, which is why a lot of people fall back on the nonprofits or the different fundraising opportunities. There is a gentleman at the Disability Rights Connecticut office who is, I think his name is Sheldon. I have to look that up better for you, but he's an attorney, and he will go and he'll look through your case and see if, you know, a denial for technology was inappropriate or appropriate, and he'll let you know. And so that's kind of something that we've really started pushing a lot more of. I will tell you that I have not seen Husky voluntarily pay for technology without a battle.
You know, and that's good information. And we'll put a lot of, I've been taking a lot of notes as you've been talking, because we always have show notes, and we're going to put a lot of this stuff in there with ideas for them. And then also you mentioned DDS, the Department of Developmental Services.
Right.
Did they fund some of this for some of their consumers?
100%, yes.
Okay. Okay.
Yes. And so actually, if it's okay, I'd like to actually tell you a couple other stories.
Yeah, absolutely.
So DDS reached out to us quite a few times in the last 2 years, especially again, because consumers with intellectual disabilities are home just like everybody else right now. And so looking for ways to help them live independently, but also safely, with the staffing shortage and with not wanting to expose themselves to a lot of people in and out of their homes. Obviously, it's been more than the last 2 years for Department of Developmental Services reaching out to us for assessments. But just locally, we've set up, I want to say, 8 or 9 different smart home settings.
Wow.
For consumers who maybe need just a little bit of extra support. One of our consumers who's right down the road from here, I helped with indoor and outdoor lighting. The Ring doorbell, so that when she was leaving home or coming home, kind of there was an awareness of, oh, she's home, she's safe. But it was also her being able to say, my staff is at the door. I can open up the door.
Mm-hmm.
So we did Alexa devices. We connected some lighting within the house so that it was set on a routine. So when she woke up in the morning, it wasn't dark. When she came home in the afternoon, it wasn't dark. We also set up things like the Nest thermostats. So we know that she's being energy efficient, but it's also, so a Nest thermostat learns from your actions, right? So if you get up every day at 6 and you turn up your heat a little bit, after a couple of days of that, it says, ooh, at 5:59, I'm going to turn up the heat for you.
Yeah.
So now when you get up,
right,
it's going to be warm. So things like that, we have set up these smart homes for consumers. And again, just in this area, I want to say it's probably 8 or 9 consumers that DDS has funded that the assessment, the installation, and training for those smart homes for these
That's
consumers.
Awesome. That's
it
awesome.
It really is. There's a big push right now within DDS to become technology first. And again, that follows with the remote supports idea. And there's a lot of opportunity for technology for individuals.
So talking about smart homes, because you hear about it, you know, a lot, we're reading about it. What kind of internet service do you need? Is it like the highest level one, the most expensive one, to support what you need in your smart home?
So that's a tough question. Obviously you need internet. And I will tell you that all of the consumers that I have set up smart homes for have had, you know, your basic Comcast.
Okay.
They're not going with the high plan.
Gotcha. Okay.
But your basic internet will do the job. It might be spotty some days, you know,
right,
if the wind
yeah.
is blowing just right. Just
yeah.
Yeah.
It might be spotty.
But that's good to know. And because I'm also going to include in the show notes, and I'm not sure if the other like Cox or Frontier, but I'm going to look into it. But like, I know Comcast has Comcast Essentials, so it's a more affordable one. So I want to include that link as well.
Yep.
So I'm going to look in the other ones as well to include that into the show notes. The Tech Act project. Are public schools involved in that at all?
K through 12, no.
Okay.
College age, yes.
Oh, okay.
Secondary education. Western Connecticut State University has an AT center. I think at one point Southern did. I don't know that they still do. So the downside to having a specific age is that the technology that they typically have represents that age or that category. So when you go to the schools, it's going to be technology that helps a student learn, whether it's live scribe pens or screen readers or Sonascent, which is a program for note taking. So those are the tools you're going to see in those settings. Whereas if you go to an AT center like Atlas, for example, we have all of the categories. If you go to EastCon, they have all of the categories, but they have a focus in education, transition, and vocational.
Mm-hmm.
So NEET also has all of the categories. Mm-hmm. They have a focus on, I believe theirs is vocational and independent living. So it just depends on where you go. But yes, there is...
Right.
There is a couple of partners. CREC is also a partner agency, which is also education. Mm-hmm. So they have a lot of focus on accessible reading materials in, again, school age.
So with the schools, can, in the public schools, can parents or caregivers request assistive technology in their IEPs? And what does that look like? Or what does even assistive technology look like in the classroom?
Right, that's a good question. So yes, parents can and should ask for assistive technology. One of the questions in the IEP is, has assistive technology been offered to the student? And if it has, it needs to be answered. And you are answering what has been offered. Now, once assistive technology is in the IEP, it has to be offered during the school day, following those guidelines or that plan. Families and caregivers who want to learn about assistive technology can reach out to any of the AT partners and ask for demonstrations. Following that line of thought, they can ask to take to sign out the technology and trial it at home. Mm-hmm. Because nobody knows your kids like you do, right?
Right.
You're going to say, my child listens to me when I set my table up this way. So I'm going to try this LiveScribe pen with my child at home because he'll listen to me. The LiveScribe pen works. It's great. So now you go into your IEP or your special education teacher or your OT or your PT, and you're going to say, I tried this. I want you to try it. Mm-hmm. Now you have sort of that basis to stand on. So the AT partners all offer demonstrations, but we also offer loans and lending. You can come in, you can sign out a device for 30 days. You're not putting out the $200 or the $1,000 or even the $50. You're not putting out that money until you've tried it. I wish this had been around 25 years ago when my daughter went through school, after I put out a lot of money trying things. So now you as a parent can come to us. You don't have to have a membership to UCP. You don't have to have a membership. To some of the other partners, you do have to have a membership. But I believe that if you're a person with a disability, those membership fees are waived for the partners. Not 100% certain. But so as a family, as a caregiver, you can come to us and ask us to trial a device or even to have a demonstration on a device. Okay. As far as educational tools, there is across the board, again, that low tech, no tech, all the way up to high tech, that is available for a classroom. You know, you see kiddos on Chromebooks. Mm-hmm. Yep, that is assistive technology. But you also see the kiddo with a slant board, which is no tech. So slant board is just that corrugated cardboard that folds over and it raises the desk up at a slant, allowing a student maybe who has some vision loss to compensate. Again, no tech. Maybe it's the chunky pen or the chunky pencil with the pencil grip, no tech, still assistive technology. So it's across the board. And special education teachers are phenomenal at looking at a student and saying, I'm not sure what this kiddo needs. Let's reach out to OT or PT or AT. We have done assessments in the schools. We have done assessments for students with complex medical needs in order to come together and, again, offer that wide variety of, it's not just education. Maybe it's independence in the school building. Maybe it's independence getting into school. Maybe it's distance learning. So we've kind of across the board helped out where we can.
So I have one last question for you, and that you mentioned the AT centers, that you guys have one and there's others around the state. What is an AT center exactly?
Sure. So picture your library, your local library, and you go in and there's shelves of books. It is literally shelves of technology. So I think in our Atlas Center in Quaker Hill, we have probably 300 pieces of technology in there. Just like a library, right? So 300 books. You come in, you look at the technology, you say, I'd really like to try this. We have you fill out a form, you take it home. If it works for you, you can hold it for 30 days. If it doesn't work, we come and get it, or you can bring it back to us. We clean it, we put it back on the shelf. The AT centers have, again, those different categories, you know, whether it's vision and hearing or whether it's computer access, positioning, some of the other categories would be speech. One of the best things about the AT centers are you don't have to be a provider. You can be a parent, you can be a user, and you can come in and you can borrow that technology. So you know you've given it all, you know, all the different shots. You've given it all the different tries before you settle on one piece of technology.
That's awesome. Yeah, absolutely. So when you said you don't need a membership, so somebody could, do you just set up an appointment to come to your AT center or?
Yeah, we do ask you to set up an appointment. Unfortunately, there are so few of us in the state that I'm on the road a good portion of my work week. So if I know that somebody needs me to be there at 3:30 this afternoon, I'm going to, you know, adjust my day so that I'm in the AT center. So I do have a person in our Quaker Hill AT center, and she's there from 9 to 2, Monday through Friday. But our AT center in Bridgeport, in Fairfield County, I'm only there one day a week. So you do have to kind of reach out and make an appointment with me so I can be there.
Great. That's good to know.
I believe most of the AT centers right now are that way because of COVID.
Right.
So making sure that they're in the office.
Right. And I'm sure people could find that information on their websites.
Absolutely.
Yeah, but definitely a fantastic resource to have in the community. And I think, you know, as we kind of wrap up here, you know, we certainly hear about the assistive tech. And I think that family members, to some extent, have been using it and they just don't know. I think parents are very resourceful, you know, when it comes to figuring out how am I going to adapt something so that it meets my child's needs. And so in reality, there's tons of mini AT centers across the state, but they're within households. And, you know, really, if you think about how these things came about, it's like special ed teachers or parents saying, hey, this is what worked for my child. Maybe this will work for someone else, you know? And I think it's really great that your organization has provided this resource within the community that's greatly needed. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Such great information. Thanks for taking the time out.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me. I enjoyed it.
Absolutely. Thank you, Shannon.
Thanks.
As always, you can find our podcast on Podbean, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and the Starting website. On any Amazon or Alexa-enabled devices, you can ask Alexa to play 99% Effective, Sarah Solutions podcast. And let us know what you want to learn more about. If you have an idea or topic, let us know. We would love to hear from you.